Hi, Charisse here with a special announcement. You can now enjoy select episodes of Detailed in video form. That's right. Detailed is now available on RCAT's YouTube channel. Now, you may be thinking, I already listened to the podcast. No need to watch it on YouTube. Well, trust me, if you don't want to miss out, even if you're an avid listener of the podcast, the video format is a completely different experience. Not only is it like hanging out with us, but you also get to hear parts of the conversation that were left on the cutting room floor. You can also see the photos, drawings, and video as we discuss the incredible projects that are featured. Come join us on YouTube. Follow the link in our show notes, and let's get into the details. This is an original podcast by RCAT. Try the number one most used website for finding building product information and save time and money. No registration is required with RCAT, so try it today and get ahead on your next project. Visit RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com.
I mean, we do have very large storage tanks on site. So two 8,500-gallon concrete tanks, so they're fireproof. And we also connected the swimming pool to a fire hydrant. So should there be a fire, the fire department can come up and hook their pumper truck to the pool. So there's another 30,000 gallons of water.
And there are these little landscape interventions that look like you're just dipping into the natural landscape. And those are right around the house. And that also kind of promotes that indoor-outdoor feeling, but it's also part of the fire-resistant approach that we took to the house.
This is Detailed, an original podcast by RCAT. I am your host, Charisse Lakeside, senior specification writer at RDH Building Science and fondly known as the CSI Kraken. We will speak with professionals who share their insights into the most complex, interesting, and odd building conditions and the ingenuity it took to make it work. Join me as I pull back the curtain on the building industry and uncover the lessons learned. You'll gain valuable knowledge to help you better navigate your next project. My guests today are Amora Fernandez Abernathy, principal, and Andy Drake, project manager from Studio Vara in San Francisco, California. Mara has been specializing in residential architecture for over 20 years. She has worked at a variety of scales, but has found that her passion is truly in the fine details. Her approach to architecture is informed by her love of craft and art and by working from the inside out. Mara has extensive experience in designing, fabricating, and working directly with artisans. After having lived and practiced in five metropolitan cities during her career, Los Angeles, Boston, New York, Barcelona, and San Francisco, she has amassed experience with a range of scales and typologies. She currently serves on the board of directors for the Westchester and Hudson Valley chapters of the AIA. Andy brings over 20 years of residential and commercial architecture experience to Studio Vara, with a particular interest in the honest expression of materials and ideas in built form. He loves encountering the aha moments of realizing a great idea while working through a project's design and details. The project we will be talking about today is the incredibly cool Fire Country Lookout Family Retreat in Healdsburg, California. But before we get started, don't forget to take a look at the project photos and drawings as you listen along. You can click the link in our show notes or visit www.rcat.com/podcast. Perched on an oak-studded hilltop west of Healdsburg, California, the Fire Country Lookout House is a sanctuary for a multi-generational family, embodying sustainable living and resilience in the climate change era. Studio Vara worked closely with their client to envision their dream home, guided by the inspiration of a simple object.
The owners had a vision to build a multi-generational family retreat on this rolling hillside. And when we first met with them, their first directive, and they grabbed this a heath bowl And they said they want something that was beautiful and timeless and also durable. And that bowl was really, that sort of direction was really instrumental to the entire team. One of the clients had worked in an environmental consulting and set a high bar for the home to be sustainable and off the grid. This directive, combined with the increasing threat of wildfires in Northern California, drove the design team to approach the entire master planning of the site and structures as a holistic strategy for self-sufficiency, resilience, and longevity.
Situated in the rural wine country just outside of town, the project needed to consider several parameters to preserve the dense forest and to remain code compliant. The U.S. Fire Administration labels this type of site development as a WUI, or WUI zone.
The house is located about 5 miles to the west of downtown Healdsburg, so it is a rural hilly area. You follow a narrow paved road through the woods, along a creek, over the hill, and along a dirt road to the entry gate. And so it's very idyllic. The project is in a wild land urban interface area, which we call a WUI zone. And so I know it's fun to say. So that's the area between, you know, natural forest, empty, unoccupied forest land, and developed town. So it's kind of that transition zone that when there is a wildfire, if that transition zone is not protected, the wildfire can continue going all the way to town. So from a code perspective, it's looked at very carefully. And the basic requirement of the WUI zone is that the structure be ignition resistant. So that directly influenced all the material decisions we made. It had a lot to do with how we sited the building. And another thing that we needed to keep in mind was kind of tree and forest management around the site and all the way down the road as well. So the site was covered in trees when we got it. And, you know, many small dug firs that kind of hid these large coast oaks that were heritage oaks. And so kind of step one was taking out a lot of the dug firs. And the client made this great decision to cut back a significant part of all these and really highlight the coast oaks. So what became this dense forest over the matter of 2 weeks was suddenly this park-like setting that was, you know, a great canvas for the house. I guess other considerations we have to make are access by fire department. The roads have to meet certain criteria. And then we thought a lot about backup power because, you know, fires do happen. We did have electricity to the site, but we kind of thought about it as the backup to the backup, right? So we have on-site energy production with photovoltaics. We have a Tesla Powerwalls, and we have a backup generator. So kind of three layers of backup. So we do a lot of these rural properties in wine country. And we, as a design team, go and camp on site before there's sketches being made. So, you know, there was a lot of tours looking at different properties to find the right fit for the client. And, you know, they wanted it to be private. It couldn't be too far from town. They wanted views and they wanted some infrastructure in place, you know, utilities. So this site had been entitled for a 5-bedroom house. There were utilities in place. The electricity was there. The well was in place. There was a septic system already permitted for that 5-bedroom building. And there was a driveway up to the building pad, although it was not code compliant, because you have to be careful about code compliance of the driveway. But that was our starting point.
The design goals were clear: prioritize fire mitigation, incorporate sustainable systems, and create an off-the-grid home that harmonizes with its natural surroundings.
Our design ethos revolves around creating a sanctuary that not only shields occupants from the external environmental adversities, but also actively contributes to their protection. From implementing innovative fire resilience measures, such as strategically placed fire breaks and defensible spaces, to incorporating advanced energy, water, and indoor environmental systems, we crafted a closed loop off-the-grid framework that prioritizes safety and sustainability. Moreover, our project champions resource efficiency and conservation at every turn. Through the harnessing of well water for multiple purposes and careful selection of drought-tolerant, fire-resistant flora, we minimized our ecological footprint while maximizing our positive impact on the surrounding ecosystem.
Strict yet straightforward permitting is required for a WUI zone, including material selection, road access, and water supply.
I would say most of the permitting process in Sonoma County, which is where we were, is fairly straightforward. There's great scrutiny around WUI, as we talked about. So that has a fairly stringent review by the fire department and the building department. So they look at all the materials we've selected and make sure that they meet the standards of WUI for being ignition resistant. And that includes the metal siding and roof, you know, any kind of exposed wood, your windows and doors. That's kind of step one. And then they look at fire truck access. They want to make sure that the road is wide enough to get trucks down there. They want to make sure that the hoses from the trucks can reach all the way around the building. And they want to make sure that you have enough water on site to fill up trucks and be able to fight a fire should it happen. So, I mean, we work very closely with the fire department and sometimes, you know, to meet the basics. And then where it makes sense, we go above and beyond. There is a well on site that was producing a significant amount when we started the project. And then as we went through the project, you know, I'm sure you read about California drought, and the level of the well went down, 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 down to where it was a real problem at the end of the project to be able to get enough water from the site. I mean, we do have very large storage tanks on site. So 2 8,500 gallon concrete tanks, so they're fireproof. And we also connected the swimming pool to a fire hydrant. So should there be a fire, the fire department can come up and hook their pumper truck to the pool. So there's another 30,000 gallons of water.
Elevated on a concrete base, the house is wrapped in standing seam zinc panels, forming a protective shell against the sun and potential wildfires. The 2020 Wallbridge fire in Sonoma County directly informed this exterior material selection and drilled down the necessity to get the fire protection systems right.
September 2020, our site supervisor had just started construction of the house. He sent a video of him standing on the recently completed foundation of, you know, looking up into this orange smoky sky with a Cal Fire C-130 plane flying over the site, dumping retardant. You know, you've seen it. And then he panned over across the valley and you could see fire. So this was the Wallbridge fire. So this was when there was the significant wildfires in Sonoma in 2020. And, you know, fortunately, the site came through unscathed. It was all fine. But it really affirmed all of our design decisions to date about what we were doing. And it influenced the remainder of our design decisions about, you know, this is real and it needs to be taken seriously. And the owners were completely on board with those decisions. So it provided, you know, great, I guess, influence or affirmation of our fire protection strategies that we were implementing. So we have this a multi-layer fire resilience strategy, and part of it is a trail system through the 15-acre site that acts as a fire break. The driveway acts as a fire break. We have a 100-foot zone around the house, a perimeter zone, that includes the removal of the ladder fuels that build up to the tree canopies. So that was the clearing out of all the Doug firs. And we have a ground-mounted sprinkler system around the perimeter of the house. And then within our 30-foot protection zone, we have a rooftop foam dispersion system that can be implemented remotely. And that was with a company named Frontline that we work closely with that system. And then we have the fire-resistant plantings around the perimeter of the building. And then the 5-foot ember zone, as it's called, includes the metal skin and the ignition-resistant materials, as well as gravel and hardscape up close to the building, so you don't get a buildup of embers that start an ignition. And that really drove the exterior material selection that we had.
The house is a 180-foot-long structure, strategically oriented along the east-west axis. Its prismatic form is gently kinked in the middle, optimizing views with pocketing sliding glass doors.
So the home is laid out as a long extruded bar that has a gentle fold in the middle. And that fold in the middle is the main entry of the home. On one side are all of the bedrooms. It is the private wing of the home. And on the other side are all the public spaces. So as the home goes from the private to the public spaces, the home physically gets more and more open. And as you notice in the great room, there are these very large pocketing doors by Fleetwood. They are 10 feet tall and 22 feet wide. And they're glass doors, and they have the ability to completely pocket, so to completely disappear. So they could be open all day. They could be left open during the night if they wanted, but they actually completely go away when they are pocketed.
Not significantly different from any other kind of sliding door. You have to consider the wall thickness and putting a pocket in there. Probably the biggest challenge was the pocketing door that went into the fireplace wall, because there was a fireplace and there was also an air conditioning unit, and there was a lot of things wanting to be in the same place at one time. So they're all insulated glass units with low E coatings, but you know, they aren't incredibly difficult to detail.
By opening this up, and they open up at the corner, the house just then tumbles into the patio, the outdoor living room, and into the pool area. And then right by the pool area, there is an outdoor pizza oven and barbecue that kind of is on, you know, it's by the pool and it's opposite the indoor kitchen. So the outdoor eating space is sort of flanked by two kitchens. And so it's very much a home for families, for entertaining, for just coming inside and outside and not actually going into the private wing. So that's the overall layout of the home.
A breezeway distinguishes the public areas from the private zones, allowing a natural flow throughout the house. This thoughtful design ensures passive ventilation and solar exposure while providing shade from the intense summer heat.
Yeah, so there is this sort of wraparound breezeway that at the end of the home becomes an exterior kind of living room. And this was really to promote the indoor-outdoor feeling, to kind of have these layers that open up to the outdoors, and also to protect the owners from the sun. It's pretty hot here. You know, it can get pretty hot in the summer. But the breezeway has these same fire resistance measures. And the metal
exterior
goes,
plaster.
Exterior plaster, yes. Sorry. And all the metal goes all the way to the outside. And then the concrete that is all around the pool comes all the way inside the home. So we just pulled the materials, pushed and pulled them from the inside to the outside, from the outside to the inside. And the other thing I want to talk a little bit about is the landscape. As Andy mentioned, there became like this park-like setting with all these heritage oaks. And so the home, when you see now that it's finished, it's sitting on this perch surrounded by these native plantings, but it's in this oak savanna and grassland. And it looks very, it's very naturalized. And there are these little landscape interventions that look like you're just dipping into the natural landscape. And those are right around the house. And that also kind of promotes that indoor-outdoor feeling, but it's also part of the fire-resistant approach that we took to the house.
The interior of the home is luxurious yet practical. Apertures in the outer shell offer glimpses to the opulence inside. Vertical cedar screens provide shade for outdoor living spaces, ensuring comfort in the natural surroundings.
So the vibe and feel is definitely back to that heath bowl. And the interior finishes are an exercise in restraint because the home is open to the outside. So the home, it couldn't stand apart from the outside. It has to really be part. Inside and outside have to blend it in as one space. And so the main materials were the natural concrete, European white oak, blackened steel, natural stone. That's it. And then we just carefully articulated and detailed all of the materials with restraint. We really used the blackened steel like an accent. So, and when you're only working with wood, when you're doing millwork and casework, you can have these little filler pieces that kind of, and the guys in the field, you're always giving them a little space. In this case, this was like a Swiss watch. There are no filler pieces anywhere. The cabinet maker is part of Fairweather Construction, and he was outstanding. And every piece of millwork is capped with blackened steel. The hood is blackened steel. So, and when we were designing the kitchen and the island, we were trying to carefully balance the amount of oak, the amount of steel, and the amount of glass, because it is a visual composition that you're making. And this composition sort of carries the whole room. And so you'll see we have a bar that's mostly blackened steel. We have a lot of cabinets, kind of a wall of oak. And then when you get to the cooktop, it's more of a combination of the glass and steel doors. You see the backsplash. And, this combination that goes all the way around is beautifully balanced. And from the interior architecture, we then took those cues into the furnishings. We picked a few light fixtures that were a little more party-like, I would say. And some of the furniture is custom. The dining table is custom. The console is custom, also has blackened steel on it. The sofa is a beautiful flex-form sofa that is both durable, comfortable, but super elegant. And as you go to the outside, there is as much furniture outside the house as there is inside the house. And that is, again, because of this indoor-outdoor ability to go back and forth. And so we also spent a lot of time selecting the furniture that goes outside. There are outdoor umbrellas that actually embed into the concrete that can be deployed so that the entire area around the pool has shade when necessary. So a lot of care was put into all of the furnishings. You'll even see in the master bedroom, there's a whole custom bed, headboard, and nightstand that was all done custom for the home. I mean, the homeowners also wanted their kids to be able to get out of the pool and like walk into the kitchen and not ruin the floors. I mean, very, very, very practical. Now, when you go into the bedroom wing, there is actually oak floors in there, but not in the public wing. So the public wing can really take a beating and still be very beautiful.
The material palette extends to the hardscape, infinity edge pool, and pool house, creating a cohesive blend with the landscape.
So since the home is a little bit on a perch, the pool is actually relatively close to the house. And we wanted it close to the house so you could just step out and just step right into the pool. Also, the further away the pool got from the house, the more the pool was kind of sticking off of that perch, right? So it had to be within a certain distance to the home. And it was also an infinity edge pool. It's not an in-ground pool, it's an infinity edge pool that really draws your eye out to the horizon. So infinity edge pools can be a little bit challenging. They need a more robust foundation. The walls that, you know, that create the infinity edge have to be perfectly level because the water is running off that infinity edge, creating that fountain-like sound and also creating that nice reflective pool. If one of the walls is off by a quarter of an inch, then all the water goes to that side. So it has to be perfectly level. And so at the pool, there were piers dug for the pool. In addition, the pool is all of that water, and that water needs all the pool equipment. And so one thinks, okay, I'll just hide the pool equipment down the hill. Well, you can't put it down the hill that far because all that water comes down the hill by gravity and force. And the pumps have to be able to pump the water back up to the pool. And so the pool equipment could only be 14 feet away from the pool. So there, you know, lots of challenging elements to consider. But I do think that the result was very successful.
The structure's skeleton, made of prefabricated heavy timber glulam frames, organizes the living spaces along a central spine.
So we worked with a company named Spearhead. It's a Canadian company. And they specialize in doing CNC milled glulams, so computer milled glulams. So they take a regular glulam and they mill it down to whatever size you want. And I think, as you can see in some of the photos, all of the beams and columns are pinned together with drift pins. So there's a steel plate inside, and the stainless steel drift pin is driven into the plate. Very cool. And kind of an unusual thing in terms of construction is all of the glulams went up before framing started. So that was, it looked like whale bones on the foundation as the start of construction. And so we set, I'm sure you can see in the plans, there's this rigorous 12-foot grid of glulams and columns and beams that kind of established the rigor of the project. And so working with them, that was another bit of R&D that we did, where we worked with Spearhead on the glulams and also on the steel screens that you see on the north side of the building, where the solid zinc standing seam transitions into the perforated. All of that had to be connected to the glulam structure. So there was a lot of thought put into how all that gets connected.
The structure's orientation to maximize views and maintain shade during hot summer months proved to be the biggest design challenge from the beginning.
One of the big challenges was siting the house, you know, getting it right on the site, orient yourself to the right views, and to provide shade when needed. In the wine country, that the summer months between June and August can just be brutally hot. You wouldn't think it's like that, but it frequently gets up to 100 degrees. And so we wanted to make sure the house was usable during those months. And so, as I touched on earlier, we frequently camp on these sites before we do it. So we locate the sunrise and the sunset during a summer solstice. We have the prevailing winds that we note. We note the views. Everyone's out there with a compass, you know, pointing at things and sketching and picking up flora and fauna for taking back to the office. So I think that is kind of, getting that right is pretty much the biggest challenge, and because you want to be able to start on a good note.
Equipped for off-the-grid living and sustainability in mind, the home includes several renewable energy features.
We have a well that was existing, and that provides water for the irrigation, fire protection, and potable use, so drinking water, and very robust filtration systems for that. On site, we have two 8,500-gallon concrete tanks, and as I mentioned, the fire hydrant connected to the pool water, so that kind of covers water. For energy, we have 15 kilowatts of photovoltaics on the roof. We have solar hot water panels on the roof that preheat water before it goes into any system. the two Tesla Powerwalls for battery storage, and then the backup generator on propane, because you don't have gas going out to a rural site. And then our PG&E connection as our backup.
So they truly can live off the grid.
Yes. During the summer months, we're producing more energy than we use by quite a bit with the PV panels.
As with most projects beginning in 2019, Studio Vara ran into construction challenges related to the pandemic in addition to looming wildfire threats.
So we had the pandemic, March 2020, which led to delays with six subcontractors and contractors and extra precautions to be on site and working from home and communication glitches and, you know, you name it. We can all tell our own stories. And then in the middle of that, we had the wildfire, which was another hump. And I think we felt like we fought over a lot of humps on this project. Probably one that caused, that was a result of these two things, were all the supply chain issues. So trouble getting aluminum, trouble getting windows, appliances, you know, you name it, there were delays. But I think the smart thing we did, and because we had a great contractor on board, was we pre-ordered as much as we could well before we needed it. So we pre-ordered, along with the contract, all of the appliances, all of the glue lamps from Spearhead, and we stored everything in a warehouse before we needed it. So because of, you know, having this contractor on board that helped us get ahead of all those issues, we avoided a lot of pitfalls that probably plagued other projects, just getting things ahead of time.
In successfully delivering on their client's vision, Mora emphasizes the importance of the Studio Vara team's diversity and how working together was the trick up their sleeve.
We are architects, interior designers, landscape designers. So our team is stacked with all these different people, and everyone has a voice. Someone might say, oh, well, that's nice that you have the concrete going inside and outside, but you might want a rug over by the sofa. So there is very much this dynamic, collaborative voice that comes out of our team that really does achieve what we're proud to say, a very warm, modern aesthetic, and very family friendly, especially for this family. This is also a family that really is about their community. They love hosting and entertaining people. They love entertaining other families. They don't ever want to make anyone feel uncomfortable or like they can't be casual. Like, I think the home is really an extension of who they are and how warm they are. Like, they don't put on any pretenses. They are who they are. And I think together with the owners, we were able to achieve this vision.
Perhaps the most important lesson learned from working on the Fire Country Lookout is understanding how critical the relationship with the owner is and the positive reinforcement that relationship can grant every step of the way.
There were many lessons learned. I think one lesson that the entire team really saw was the effect, the positive effect that an owner has on the team. As Andy mentioned, this project, you know, we had the pandemic, we had the fires, we had all the supply chain issues, and we had the owners were very involved, engaged in the project. Every time we came over one of these bumps in the road, the owner was there rallying the team on. The owner really believed in the team, and the team cohesion was phenomenal. And I'd like to quickly just mention our team members, because without them, we would not have been able to do this project. But the owner was very, very positive and continually in the deepest, I call it the valley of darkness of the project, would always be acknowledging all of the work everyone did. And I mean, every single person was sending videos, was sending texts, just really trying to keep that enthusiasm up. And it worked. it really, really worked. And so one of the lessons learned that I would like to share with the audience and like to share with owners, owners have the ability to positively, exponentially affect their project by doing three things. The first thing is that they make durable decisions and they're involved. The second thing is that they pay their bills on time. When a client pays their bills on time, they show the team that the team is important. When the team knows that they're important, they in return make that project and that client the priority. There's enough stress and friction on anybody, any team member, any subcontractor on the job, and just that little action sends an incredible signal. And that's what this owner did. And the last thing, which this owner did all the time, was to say thank you. Always would walk up to people, look them in the eye, shake their hand, take their picture, bring them food. I mean, it was really incredible. So those three tips really have an incredible impact on the team. So that's kind of team-wide. Internally, as I mentioned, we have many different disciplines across our team. And because of that, you know, there might have been 12 different people working in and out of the project. So they're not working on it all the time. And we definitely had some communication challenges. And so because of that, and because some of this was happening during what we call remote work, we have implemented a lot more communication protocols, and that just the communication alone improved exponentially in our office. And we also learned that we need to pick and choose how many R&D elements we have on a project.
I'm going to reiterate the number of prototypes on a project. I mean, you can see from the photos that there was a lot of special details on this project. And, you know, we spent a lot of time figuring those out. So, you know, I think you want to pick where your moments of magic are and know that you can't have magic everywhere. It's our biggest lesson. I know we all want it everywhere, but you can't have it.
Not surprisingly, Andy Amora felt a genuine connection to the landscape and praised the team that made the project a success.
I love the connection to the site. I love the location. I love how we did the right thing for the site with that building. And, you know, I love the inspiration of the directive from the owner that this building is to be a family heirloom. So, you know, when you think about what you're designing and know that it needs to last 100 years, it really influences the decisions you make for that. So I love that part of it.
I have to echo what Andy says, but when I look at the project, what I see is the team. I see the hundreds of hands that touch this project, and I would love to just shout out to some of these amazing team members. The contractor, Simon Fairweather and Associates, was phenomenal. Spearhead
was phenomenal, yes. We worked with Evan Shively from Aborica for the cool redwood art piece you saw in the outdoor living room. SC Fabrications on the cast concrete fire table that's in the outdoor living room too. That was actually a really cool thing to work on. I don't think it quite gets enough photo attention, but it's pretty cool when you look at it closely. Strandberg Engineering from San Francisco, a multitude of A-class subcontractors. Everyone, I think, was inspired by the owner, inspired by the project, and really raised the level of their game if they were working on this project. Everyone gave it their all on this. It was fun to see.
We also had Tucci Lighting Design, and then our own team, Chris Roach, my business partner.
John Springer worked
on
this.
Luis
Tolano. Nick Brown. Yeah, very, very big team. And then Graham Quinn was on landscape design. Zoe
Shu and Jacqueline Lytle were on the interior furnishings. along with Gail Avila and Isha Sood. So we had quite a big team, lots of hands. And that's what I see at the end. I see all these hands that have touched this home.
The Fire Country Lookout House is a model of sustainable and resilient development, perfectly suited for wine country living. The design features not only redefine fire protection, but also infuse the home with warmth and style. Before we close out this episode, I always try to gain some additional insight from our guests about the greater industry. I was curious what Maura and Andy thought about residential architects struggling with resources that larger firms typically enjoy, and if they had any ideas on how we can improve conditions for small firm architects.
It is certainly a challenge, and it is a challenge that we face. I think what we have been trying to do internally, because many of us wear lots of different hats, is to, amongst the staff, is to be really transparent with what we're struggling with, what we're working on. And I think the one tip I have is communication, communication, communication. Because if you're not communicating that you're struggling making payroll or with marketing, then nobody knows. And then you just have a grumpy boss. But if we're more transparent, then people, it actually kind of makes people rise up to help you. So my only tip is to communicate.
I think that's pretty good. I mean, maybe it is like, know what you don't know and be willing to go out and get the help you need, whether it's marketing or spec writing or
HR,
business coaching or HR, whatever, you know, go out and get somebody that really knows what they're doing, like you.
Like you.
I really enjoyed this conversation with Andy and Maura. I hope this episode sparks a new idea, helps you solve a problem that you've been working through, or inspires a mark that you want to leave on this world.
As professionals and architects, we owe the next generation the opportunity to succeed. And whether it's being a designer or architect, we owe them our time to help them find a path to get to licensure or being a great designer or learning how to be a good project manager. We need to be generous with our time. So I think we have a good mentorship program in place, but it's not just utilizing a mentorship program. You know, as professionals, we need to be generous with our time to them.
Along the lines of what Andy said, we do strongly feel that we need to bring up and skill up the younger generation. And also the women. The attrition for women in this profession is unbelievable. So within the office here at Studio Vara, Jackie, who you have met, has started a women's mentorship program. And it is really popular. The women in this office love it. It is so popular that we're opening it up to the men. But it is just, as Andy says, that generosity. This is a hard profession. It's not getting any easier. And we're at an age now where the most important thing that we can do is actually give our time and really level up people as much as possible so that they are empowered to be architects.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more, visit rcat.com/podcast to see photos, details, and more related project and product information that we discussed today. While you're there, take a look around rcat.com. For over 30 years, RCAT has been the resource for AEC professionals to find the right products for their project. Try RCAT and see how their tools can save you time and money and help you get ahead on your next project. Visit rcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can support us by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and sharing this with your friends. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back to share more stories and lessons learned to help you navigate your next project.